There have been thousands of books written about Abraham Lincoln. Many of them line an entire wall in Pulitzer Prize-winning historian Doris Kearns Goodwin's home library in Concord, Massachusetts. The volume served as research material that helped shape her 2005 book, Team of Rivals, The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln. Portions of Goodwin's book became the basis for Steven Spielberg's new film, Lincoln, a project in which she's been a close collaborator. With Lincoln opening in theaters nationwide on Friday, she joins us to discuss the 16th president as a historical figure and movie subject. And it's a great pleasure to say hello once again to Doris Kearns Goodwin. Thank you very much for being here. Always a delight to have you on our program.
I'm always glad to be with you. Thank you.
So you were at the premiere on Friday night in Hollywood. What was that like?
Well, I'll tell you, it's an extraordinary thing to watch this person, Abraham Lincoln, that I lived with for 10 years, able to walk and talk and be involved and be warm with people in all the ways I just imagined in my head, and then you see it on this huge screen, it just makes you feel like you've been somehow catapulted back in time and as if you're actually watching Lincoln walk on the stage. It was an incredible experience.
You know, we spoke a few moments ago to Tony Kushner, who is the screenwriter for the film. And I mentioned an earlier conversation that I had with you where we were talking about how difficult it is to leave a subject and how difficult it was for Lincoln to leave you. So really, once you finished the book, this project came soon after. So I get the sense that he really never did leave you.
You know, you're really right. It's true. Every now and then, I'm working on a new book on Theodore Roosevelt and the broken friendship with William Howard Taft, and I really care about it, and it's what most of my days are spent thinking about. But every time I look at the couch where I wrote the Lincoln book, I would feel sad missing him. And then once this started becoming, part of my life as well as the new book, I felt exactly like you said, like, he's back. I haven't lost him after all. So I don't know what will happen after the movie itself begins to fade. I'll have to figure out another way to keep alive with Abraham Lincoln. It's interesting, all the Lincoln scholars have said, once you've spent time with him, you're never going to want to let him go. And that's why so many of them have spent their whole lives studying Abraham Lincoln. I can understand.
When you met Steven Spielberg, I guess it was in the late 90s, and you were starting to work on Team of Rivals, did it surprise you that he took such an intense interest in the subject?
Well, the first time I met him, which was at a panel of historians where he was doing a documentary on the history of the millennium, even at that panel, before he even knew I was talking about Lincoln, he talked about Lincoln. So Lincoln has been in his heart long before I thought of Team of Rivals, long before we made a deal to work together on it. And I guess it's just been something that he wished he could do. And it was so lovely. At one point he said, I just had to be, he said, at that stage in my life as a movie maker where I felt ready for it. So here's this extraordinarily successful movie director who felt he had to be ready to take on Lincoln. And I think given the movie that he surely was.
This took a long time. I mean, your book came out in 2005, and here we are in 2012, and the movie is just coming out. So it took a long time to materialize. What was he looking for to make sure that he got it right?
Well, I think two things. One, he was looking for the right screenwriter, and he certainly found him in Tony Kushner. So Tony started in 2006, and it took him a long time to get the script down to a story within a story that could be told on the big screen. And I think originally he had 600 pages, maybe 700, and I saw all those various drafts, and Kate Chase was in it, and Salmon Chase, and then it got shorter and shorter and shorter, and they finally had come to the decision to just tell this story of the 13th Amendment, but within it, Lincoln's character, his humor, his warmth, his convictions, his strength, all come out, which is the important thing. And then secondly, he just wanted to wait for Daniel Day-Lewis. And when Lewis agreed to do the movie, he himself said, I want another year to just think about Lincoln and absorb it before you start filming. So I think getting Tony and getting Daniel Day-Lewis was worth all the wait.
You can't, after seeing the film on Saturday, I just can't imagine anyone else playing the role. It takes about 3 seconds before you no longer even think about Daniel Day-Lewis and you're just living with Lincoln.
It's true. It is a peculiar thing. You really are not even aware sometimes that you're seated in a movie theater. You just feel somehow you've been allowed to watch him. You know, and those kind of details that Daniel cared about, I took him to Springfield for a couple days when he first agreed to become Lincoln, before that year-long process he wanted to study him, and took him to the house, took him to the law offices, took him to the museum, and even then we talked about how did Lincoln sound, you know, and we knew from people who had recorded, not his voice, but recorded listening to him at places, that he had a high-pitched voice which went way over a big crowd and could be reached in the far reaches of the crowd as opposed to a baritone. He also knew how he walked, you know, that he walked like a laborer, one of his partners said, as if he had the burden of the world on his shoulders and was stepping over difficult ground. And when you listen to that voice and you see that walk and you watch the humor and his face lighting up, I mean, that was the thing I cared the most about, that somehow he would tell some of those crazy stories so that his humor would come alive. Tony, I must have said to him 100 times, you've got to tell the Ethan Allen story, and he did.
Yes, I'm so glad. And a highlight of the film. When you were going along with Daniel Day-Lewis, brought him to Springfield, the one thing he did not want to do was visit the grave.
Isn't that interesting? Yes, I think he just did not want to think about Lincoln dying because he had to create Lincoln the live man. You know, and I can understand that. I couldn't bear, even when I was getting near the end of the book, to think about him dying. In fact, on the last day of his life was one of the happiest days of his life, the war coming to an end, a carriage ride with Mary. And I almost wanted to just end it there when he went off to Ford's Theater without having to deal with the aftermath. And even then, I have little interest in the conspiracies and what happened afterwards. You just want to keep that person alive in your mind. And that was an instinct that Daniel had on that very first trip.
Obviously, and we talked to Tony about this, but obviously his script focuses on a very small part of your book. At this point, there really are no rivals. They have already come together as a team and all to fight to pass the 13th Amendment and abolish slavery constitutionally. What was it like, and what was your first reaction when your work had been narrowed so?
Well, I was there during the whole narrowing process. It's not as if, you know, I didn't see it getting littler and littler in terms of the story, because as I say, at one point, Tony had started in 1863, and then he was in 1864, and so Chase was there originally, and I don't think McClellan was ever in there. But Seward was the one I cared about the most because that friendship is the most intense of those rivals, and thank God he's preserved there. But as I say, I think more important than the plot, and they do have a story in the movie that has a beginning, middle, and end because of the passage of the 13th Amendment, what I care about most is how did Lincoln get projected, and all of the 800 pages that I spent was really to try and make Lincoln's characteristics come to life. And all of those they captured as brilliantly as I can imagine in that shorter space of time. If they had taken the whole 1860 to 1865, it would have been much more horizontal and not as deep, and you might not have gotten the deepest. You might have gotten all the characters, but you probably wouldn't have gotten as deep into Lincoln, and that was the most important thing.
In getting deep into Lincoln, there are these wonderful moments in the film where, because his face has such a sadness to it, but when that breaks and he starts to tell a story and that smile comes, it just lights up the screen.
Absolutely. No, I mean, that's exactly what happened with Lincoln. I mean, people would say you would see him sitting in the corner, even as a young man, and he looked like the world was on his head, that he was so sad, melancholy dripping from his face. Then suddenly he'd rise up and start telling one of these stupid stories. He would laugh, he would hit his knee, his face would light up, his eyes would shine. He came to life again, almost as if he had been off in some corner. And Daniel Day does that over and over again in the stories he tells. You really do see that shiny face when he comes to do it, and that's what matters most to me. You know, people have often asked me, if you could only meet with Lincoln, like, for one night, what would you want to ask him? And I know, as an historian, I'm supposed to say, well, I would ask him about what would you have done differently about Reconstruction, but I know I wouldn't say that. I would say, tell me a story, Mr. Lincoln, so I could watch that face come to life.
And it seems like he had a lot of stories.
And he had tons of them. I mean, from the time he was a young attorney on the circuit in Illinois, when the judges and the attorneys would travel together 6 weeks in the spring and 6 weeks in the fall, And they would all gather in the tavern at night to relax, enjoy, and replenish their energies. Lincoln would start telling stories, and they would come from miles around. He could entertain the crowd for hours with his back against the fire. And then all those stories stayed in his head. So in the middle of a cabinet meeting, they'd always usually have a point, and they'd make some point, and some people like Stanton, who didn't think it was funny in the middle of anything, would just, oh, no, not another story, and they capture that in the movie, too.
And he's also seen very much as a political figure in the film. There are all of these qualities, and yet we still see him as a political animal, as a political figure. And there's that very striking, almost scary moment in the movie where he says, get me those votes.
Right, and those are actually Lincoln's words. He actually said that. I am president, clothed with great power. You procure me those votes. And so I think, you know, what I cared about in writing the book, and the movie illustrates it even more in a certain sense because of the concentrated period of time, was showing him as a politician. You know, we think of him as a great statesman, but during that research of 10 years, I realized, my God, he's a great politician, which was why the subtitle of the book was The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln. And at a time like ours, when there's such cynicism about politicians, when making a deal seems like a betrayal to one side or another, you watch this guy making deals right and left, physically going out to make the deals. I think the timing couldn't be more perfect. Here we've got a session of Congress, rather, after the election, between the new Congress coming in exactly the same as in Abraham Lincoln's time. Something big needs to get done for the fiscal cliff, just as that 13th Amendment had to be passed. Lincoln did it by compromising. All factions come together, and the ones that don't get beaten. And hopefully that's going to happen in this way, too.
When you see the film up there on the big screen and realizing that you were part of the process all along the way, can you disconnect from all of that and just see it for what it is, which is a 2.5-hour entertainment?
I think so. I mean, I think the first time I saw it, which was at Steven Spielberg's house, there was no way of disconnecting from where I was watching it,
right,
with his wife, with his assistant, Christy McCosco. So then, you know, I wasn't just a person seeing it. Then we had a showing specially in Boston that they allowed us for our family and friends. And I think there I really was able to see it more just as a person watching it. At the premiere, again, you're very aware that this is not an ordinary way of watching it. But I have a feeling I'm just going to have to go to a regular theater at some point, just anonymously watching it, and then get the enjoyment that the regular people are getting from it, which has been wonderful to hear people's reactions after they see it.
It also seems like a wonderful introduction, especially to kids, about the 16th president.
I think so, too. You know, I think that, you know, whenever you can get another medium than a book, whether it's a documentary or a film, a short or a long film, to spark an interest in some young person, and then they go to read more about the subject. And Lincoln is something that people become interested in them even when they're young for some reason. You have these young people that have always cared about Lincoln. So I think for them to have that solidified, and for others who know very little, it will make him, you know, seem relevant, and then they can read more. And that's the most wonderful thing a film can do.
Were there things that you mentioned some of the characters that did not show up in the movie. One of the characters that does show up in a large way, thanks in part to the role and thanks in part to the performance by Tommy Lee Jones, is that of Thaddeus Stevens. Not a huge character in your book, but comes through in such a big way in the film.
Well, and what's so good about that is what is big throughout Lincoln's presidency is his having to deal with the radical element of the Republican Party. It wasn't always only Thaddeus Stevens. It's a whole group of congressmen and senators that he had to deal with, and there's a whole series of episodes of that I had to deal with during that longer period of time, but again, capturing it through this one character in this extraordinary performance of the Thaddeus Stevens played by Tommy Lee Jones captures something larger and something smaller in a great way.
Doris Kearns Goodwin's book, Team of Rivals, The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln, inspired the Steven Spielberg film, which opens on Friday. A film tie-in edition of the book has just been released by Simon & Schuster. Doris, it's always a great pleasure to have you on the program. I wish you all the luck in the world, best of luck in the future project, and thank you so much for sharing time with us this morning.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.
I appreciate it as always.
Take care.
Thank you. Again, Doris Kearns Goodwin is the author of Team of Rivals, The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.